Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve off-court problems. They'll talk about the latest news in college and professional basketball with coaches like Jim Boeheim, former players like Stephanie White, basketball analysts like Grant Hill, and more. Revealing insights that made them into the leaders they are today. And don't miss President Obama, sharing how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism.
From the Clark Ford Studios in Oxford, Mississippi, it's The Beer Garden, presented by Southern Traditions Farms. Join MPW Digital's Neil McCready as he visits with guests from all walks of life, taking a deep dive into their unique stories. Now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Welcome back to the Beer Garden presented by Southern Traditions Farm. Beer Garden's been dead for about, I don't know, year, 2 years. It's been something I've thought about bringing back, and I'm going to do it. I'm Neil McCready. Welcome into the Beer Garden. What we'll do each week, it's roughly my plan, once a week, maybe not quite that consistent. Different times it might be more than that. Other times it might be less than that. I'll try to get into a routine. Not going to overpromise here. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to visit with people that I'm interested in talking to, and hopefully you will find those conversations interesting as well. Sometimes it'll be sports. Sometimes it won't. It might be politics. It might be economics. It might be just things that I'm interested in. It might just be people that I think are kind of cool, and I want to hear their story. That's the big thing. I want to hear people's stories. I always talk about if I taught a journalism class, which I never will, assignment one in Journalism 101 would be go out on campus, wherever that campus might be, find somebody, tell me their story, write their story. Everyone has a story, and some people's stories are really fascinating. So that's what the Beer Garden is going to be, I hope. Like I said, sometimes it'll be sports. Sometimes it won't be sports at all. I'll let you know ahead of time so that we're not wasting your time. I'm not going to try to be Joe Rogan or anything like that. I'm nowhere near that good. But I'm always interested in that format of podcast. It's been the kind of thing that I've thought about doing and kind of thought would be fun for me and might energize me. And hopefully in return, you guys will get a podcast that you enjoy as well. I'm proud to announce that it's brought to you by Southern Traditions Farm. It's a 68-acre, 32-stall, upscale equestrian training and boarding facility in Canton, Mississippi. Two sand rings, a grass ring, miles of wooded trails. A lot to be offered at Southern Traditions. Horseback riding offerings. You can buy your first horse and compete at nationally recognized competitions. There's a lot going on. It's a great place for events, reunions, parties, that kind of thing. So check it out on Facebook or Instagram at Southern Traditions Farm. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. As always, Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Call that number, ask for Corey Clark, and Corey, give you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours on the Ford vehicle that you're looking for. Great service, great products. Corey and the people at Clark Ford want to be your car guy. They want to be your truck guy. They'll prove to you what that means when you make the call. 662-257-1900. Speaking of the Clark Ford Studios, Robert Perry from here in Oxford was kind enough to come to the Clark Ford Studios and have a seat and talk with me about his story. His story is one that I didn't pick up on until August the 14th, 2016. If you live in Oxford, that's a date that you remember. It's a date that a plane went down on its way back from Orlando to Oxford. It went down around Tuscaloosa. There were three couples on board. They all perished in that flight, leaving this town in total shock. It was something that hit home in our house because my middle child, Caroline, was very good friends and is very good friends still with Sarah Perry. And I guess they were in the eighth grade at the time. And Sarah lost both of her parents, Michael and Kim Perry, in that plane crash. That day, Robert Perry was in Memphis, and that day changed his life. He went from being in charge of four young people to in charge of seven. He went from living in Memphis, where he had just moved, to having to move to Oxford, completely changed his life, his wife Ashley's life. And I've watched from afar over the years. As we've passed in social circles to some degree. Our kids are similar ages in some capacities. We've been at the same soccer games or dance recitals or whatever the case may be, cross paths. And I've always just admired their strength from afar. And I've always told myself it was a story I wanted to hear on a podcast. And when I started thinking about relaunching the Beer Garden, there was something that always told me, I want the first guest to be Robert Perry. I asked him to do it. He was kind enough to do it, generous with his time. It's a gut-wrenching story. It's also an uplifting story about going through, obviously, the worst tragedy that a family can go through and to try to get to the other side, a process that's still going today. But you'll hear Robert talk about Perry grit and about the word grit and about perseverance and about overcoming adversity and the power of family and love and all of those things that I think you will enjoy here on sort of edition one of the new and hopefully improved Beer Garden. So without further ado, we go to the MyPerfectFranchise.net hotline and Robert Perry here on the Beer Garden presented by Southern Traditions Farm. Robert, I appreciate you doing this. I have always wanted to do this. I've thought about asking you years ago to do this. And I'm kind of glad I waited until this point because there's been a lot of time that's passed since your brother and your sister-in-law passing in the crash. So I'm going to start here. I've spent the last several days since you were kind enough to agree to do this wondering, how do I start this? I'm going to start here. What do you remember about, I don't mean the specific day, but we'll use this day, Saturday, August the 13th, 2016. What was your life like on that Saturday?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've never been asked that one. It's always about that Sunday. So, my family has moved around a lot. My four kids and Ashley and me, because they've supported me in my career, and I was always the guy with my hand up. So, we had moved to seven states. Ironically, started in Oxford, Mississippi, but on that Saturday, the 13th of August, we were in Memphis. And we had just moved back to Memphis. We were living in an apartment, and we were redoing a house. So my kids had been in school for 3 days at that point. So they were Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We've told them this several times, but we meant it this time, and that was the fact that was going to be our last move. So really wanted to get back to Memphis.
You had moved there from Oklahoma City, right?
Yeah, from Edmond, Oklahoma. Okay. Yeah. And so Ashley's from Arkansas, and my mom at the time lived in Little Rock, Arkansas, and my brother and sister-in-law and my two nieces and one nephew lived in Oxford. And so I travel a lot for work. I'd really needed to be close to an airport, so we lived in Memphis. I cannot even tell you what I did on that Saturday, but I would say it was our normal kind of weekend. My son was playing a lot of golf at the time, so we were probably around either the country club or the pool, and just kind of getting acclimated back to Memphis. That was our second stop. We had been there before and moved a few places in between, and we were glad to be back. Our kids were in St. Louis Catholic Schools right there in East Memphis. So that was Saturday, August 13th, 2016.
Your kids at that point were how old?
So Knox was 13. Ada Grace was 11. Lucy was 9. And Annie was 6.
So you're back in Memphis and you've got the four kids kind of stair-stepped, getting a house renovated.
Yeah.
Probably feeling pretty damn good about where things were going. Your career is still going great, but it was going great. You spending a Saturday, probably a little hectic in an apartment, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it even possible? Do you even remember your life that much back then? Because it changed so dramatically the next day, and we'll talk about it. Is there a line of demarcation for you in your life when you think about it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we try to be intentional with all we do. And again, having moved around as much as we have, you know, we started in Oxford, we moved to Baton Rouge, moved to Little Rock, moved to Charlotte, moved to Memphis, moved to Vegas, moved to Oklahoma City, and then had just moved back to Memphis. So, you know, we're a tight family. And so we did a lot together. And, you know, I can still remember it just being us, the six of us. And we were also really close to my brother and Kim. And, you know, I tell people my brother was my hero. I wanted to dress like him and wear my hair like him and be like him as much as I could. And we were close to our nieces and nephew. We were their godparents. We were there for all the special occasions. And even with the moves, we'd come back once a year for football games, at least to one football game. And then we would always see each other at Thanksgiving and or Christmas. So yeah, I can remember before that time. And some days it seems like that was 20 years ago. And some days it seems like it was yesterday. So
I can't even imagine. Let's talk about that day. Sunday, August the 14th, 2016. I remember the first phone call I got about it because someone had information wrong. They said, hey, a plane crashed from Orlando headed to Oxford. It was an Ole Miss plane is what someone said. Mm-hmm. And I knew that Ole Miss opened its football season a couple weeks later in Orlando against Florida State. And I thought, oh, wow, I wonder if they had some advanced people on the plane. I need to make a couple of phone calls because I was sitting downstairs working on my 10 weekend thoughts that I do every week at rebelgrove.com. And I thought, oh, and I called Hugh Freeze. Actually, I just went right to Hugh Freeze. And I said, are any of your people on a plane? No. And I said, well, a plane went down. And he said, who was on it? And I said, I don't know. And a little while later, our daughter, Caroline, who, you know, Caroline was friends with Sarah. Mm-hmm. They're still friends, but they were chummy at that point. And Caroline loved Sarah Perry because she loved going. Number one, they were friends. She looked up to her. Number two, she loved going to Kim's annual Christmas party. They did an ornament swap.
Yeah.
And it was one of the things that Caroline really liked. And she got to be with all of her friends and all of that stuff. And Caroline said that Sarah's parents were on that plane. And I said, there's no way. And sure enough, and that's from that point forward, all I could think about was that little girl. And for you, how did you find out about the crash? What was that reaction? What was that like? I can't even imagine.
Yeah. So I was actually at a golf tournament in Memphis with Knox. So, it was a 9-hole tournament and, I had my phone off, which is pretty rare for me because I'm on the go quite a bit and connected almost always. And so when we finished the tournament, we were scoring. So if you've ever been to a golf tournament, everybody kind of stands in the same place and is looking at the scoring. And so I just had a great day with Knox, just being one-on-one with him. I was kind of his caddy at the time, mainly just riding around in the golf cart and trying to help him out as much as possible. And my mom called. And so luckily I missed all the other calls, but when my mom calls, I answer almost always. So I answered the phone and I said, hey, we're scoring. I'll call you right back. And she said, no, you can't call me back. She said, your brother's been in an accident. And so I said, so my brother drove, if you ever rode with him, he drove like a maniac. So he had 5 offices for his periodontics business, drove fast pretty much everywhere he went. So my very first thought was like, oh, wow, he's been in a car wreck. Like, that's awful. And my mom just, that was what I thought in my head. And the next second, she's like, they both died. And I was just like, oh, my God. So freaked out just in front of everybody just because of the emotions that come along with that and that message. And so the general manager of the golf course took me in his office, and my mom said, just sit down and then gain your composure and call me back. And so she was in Oxford with their 3 kids at the time, living in Little Rock, but had come over to Oxford to watch the kids while Michael and Kim went down for the dental convention for continuing education. So, Ashley was at the Racquet Club, in Memphis with our 3 girls. and I was with Knox. And so I called Ashley, told her what happened. She raced over there, and I was like, we got to get down to Oxford, like, right now, mainly just so that I can be with my mom and so that I can be with Sarah and John West and Anna Reed. And we looked at each other and just said, like, we're about to race these kids. Like, this is – because I knew what my brother and I had planned with our estate planning, and luckily we had done that together. And so that took the guesswork out of who was going to raise the kids. Now, it took a little while before everybody – realized what was going to happen, but I knew straight away.
You all had talked about it.
Yeah, well, we had written documents with the state, with our wills and with our estates that said, hey, listen, like, you know, I was always very close to Kim because they started dating when I was like in the fifth grade. So they were high school sweethearts, and so when Kim was in ninth grade, I was in fifth grade, and Brad, her brother, and I are really close, and so we had kids at the time. We just had one kid. And so he had Sarah, I had Knox, and we sat down and we said, okay, we're going to, like, if something happens to me, you know, make sure that in his case, Kim's taken care of. In my case, Ashley's taken care of. If something happens to both of us, we want you to take the kids. Will you do that? Yes, of course. You know, nobody thinks it's going to happen to both of them, though, you know. So, obviously huge shock that day. It was raining really hard and I was just ready to drive down there. And Ashley's like, you can't drive. You got to wait for me. Like, I'm going to come over there. I'm going to drive you. One of my really good friends, Jonathan Lyons, kind of helped with just, organizing some thoughts because we had to get our kids changed. We didn't know how long we would end up staying. We didn't know what we were walking into. And so, I'm Catholic. So in Memphis, there's St. Louis Catholic Church has perpetual adoration, which is basically 24/7 adoration where you can pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament. So I went straight there. I had told Ashley to drop me off there. I just wanted to pray. I knew it'd be quiet. My friend Jonathan came.
This is
up.
That afternoon.
Yeah, this is okay. Like right when that happened. So she was going to pack bags so that she could, so that we could all go down to Oxford. So my phone's obviously just blowing up. I'm just, you know, lost for words at the time. And we get in the car and we drive down to Oxford. And when we got here, and I don't know where you were at the time, but that street, you know, Jason Freese lived catty corner from my brother in Grand Oaks. And literally there were cars, there were news trucks. There was, it looked like a bad science fiction movie or something.
So yeah.
I just run in, see my mom, hug my mom. And then I got, and the kids all had their friends over there. So they were trying to be as normal as possible. And obviously a lot of Michael and Kim's friends were there at the time. And Ashley and I are together and we just pulled each kid in to like the guest bedroom and just told them that we were going to take care of them, that they were going to be okay. How sorry we were that this had happened. And we knew that they were in shock, and they were in shock.
Yeah.
I mean, they did. Everybody handles grief differently, and everybody handles, you know, being told something like that differently. Whether it's just kind of laughing it off, or crying and wanting to be away from each other, or wanting to be around a bunch of people.
I've always wondered this. This is kind of an off topic. It's on the topic, but it's offbeat a little bit. That next day, and even that day, I remember Caroline wanting to be there for her friend. And then it was kind of like, but everybody else is there too. And you realize they're kids. And I was like, no, they don't want people there right now. You don't need to be there. And it was, but everyone's there. And I let her go and I had to go pick her up. It was the first time I ever saw you. I walked into the house and I've never felt so, I was like, I don't need to be here. This is not right for me to be here. And there were so many people there. And I was like, surely other people, what was that? Did you want to go, hey, everybody get out. We need to have a meeting? Or was that looking back, was that almost kind of a welcome distraction to give you a minute to process everything that was happening?
Yeah, I think that like one thing about Oxford, Mississippi is just people care about people. And, you know, we were surrounded with people that love these kids, that love Michael and Kim, that wanted to do whatever they could do to help. And, you know, the main thing for us was just, we want to make sure that we were there with the kids. And a lot of people that would come in and say, we can take them to their games or their practices or their out of town soccer tournaments, you know, Ashley and I made a pact. We were like, we're going to take these kids to these things. And it wasn't that we didn't care about who was asking. Some of the people we didn't know yet. So yeah, we didn't want to just be farming them out. And we knew they were very emotional just in general, as you would be. And we had Kim's mom, drove up from Brandon. My mom was already there. Kim's brother lived in London. And so he was calling me going, is this real? Michael's best friend and executor of his estate, Kurt Rademacher, lived in Singapore. And he's the one that had all the documents that I knew that we could, you know, be able to show that I would end up being their legal guardian. But yeah, I think the chaos was probably good at the time, just having that many people around. And Sarah actually had planned like a birthday party for Ellis Farese. And that's why, like, I think the high school said, if you want to get out, or the middle school said, if you want to get out, you're out. So obviously everybody leaves to go out for that. So yeah. So there was a lot. It was a lot of sleepless nights and wire to wire, just trying to figure out what's what. My wife was just absolutely amazing through all this. She didn't sign up for this. I mean, much easier for me because it's my brother. But she was school teacher by trade. So she literally would write out, and I'd tell people that had their one kid to figure out what they were going to do for the week. I said, we got 7 kids that are all doing 2 activities twice a week. We have to be at 28 different places, and that's after school. And it was tough.
It's just a wild story. What was the kids' reaction? They were young. Michael's kids at that age, Sarah would have been in the...
She was 13.
She was 13, so she was 8th grade.
Yeah, John West, 12. So he was 7th grade, and then Anna Reed was 7. So she was in 1st grade.
What were their reactions to being told that their parents were gone?
Yeah, so my mom was there with them for the initial reaction. So my mom was supposed to pick them up at the Oxford airport. They were flying directly, or intended to fly directly into the Oxford airport. And she was waiting around just on like, well, we're supposed to be here at 1. Nobody's responding. And then Sarah was old enough to have a phone. So then there started like this text thread about this plane crash. At the time, kind of like you said, they didn't know who all was on the plane. They didn't know if there were survivors. There was a lot of unknowns at the time. And then, the people in Alabama couldn't really say, they couldn't confirm everything until they knew for sure. And so obviously a lot of shock and just uncertainty of like, oh, like we heard that that one of the couples died on a car wreck leaving the airport. So they're at the airport, and there were just all these different rumors that were going around that they didn't really know what was true and what wasn't. And then Jason Farese's dad, John Booth, actually walked over from Jason's house to tell my mom and Sarah and John West and Anna Reed that there was a plane crash and their parents didn't make it. I wasn't actually there at that point. So I got down there a couple hours later.
What was their reaction to you? They knew you, obviously, but you were Uncle Robert.
I mean,
you weren't dad.
Right. Yeah, I think that's, you know, a lot of people ask me about just the situation and was it easier or harder? And I think that one thing that Ashley and I have always stuck to is that we're not their parents. Like, we'll never replace their parents, and we will parent them. We do have certain expectations, and my brother and I were very much aligned. I feel like Kim and Ashley were very much aligned and just, you know, how they wanted to raise kids and their expectations. So that remained. I want to say, and we may not know this for a while, but that when they look back, they see us as just like a fresh face and a familiar face and somebody who they understand that we're going to be with our aunt and uncle versus, you know, having to go out for adoption maybe even, or foster homes or living with grandmas, which would, you know, who love them and that kind of thing. But raising kids is hard. And so I think, you know, we moved into their house. Um, we we thought at the time that it would be better if we came to Oxford versus bringing them to Memphis where we were. So
you talk about parenting. Parenting's hard. Parenting's challenging. I mean, even when your kids are doing great, sometimes parenting is challenging. Parenting kids that aren't yours, even though you love them and they're your brother's kids and you were going to be involved in their lives to some degree, no matter what.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden you're parenting them and they're young and they need guidance and they've just suffered this incalculable loss in their lives that they probably at that point really can't register. How difficult was it to parent kids that weren't yours?
Yeah, very hard for several reasons. One is that, you know, we did have different rules around what our expectations were, and now they were our rules. And so that was kind of tough because it's like our four kids understood what the rules were, but they didn't because they were brought up, even though it's like my brother and Kim, they had different rules for their kids. Not astronomically different, but I think that
whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You were stricter or you were?
I think we were stricter. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And my brother loved sports and built a sportsplex and really wanted their kids to be good at sports. And so they were on a bunch of different teams and they valued grades. And so they wanted their kids to do well in school, which they did. And then when we got there and there were seven, we had to say, hey, like, you can't play on three different teams. Like, that's impossible, you know? So that probably as a 13-year-old or 12-year-old looked like, wow, you're kind of strict. Like, I can't go to Alabama or Florida or Georgia or wherever the team that club team was going. And I think that for us, you know, we were very cautious around our own kids because we kind of put them over on the side because, you know, their cousins were grieving. And then I can remember one day that just kind of crushed me as my son said, like, Dad, are we ever gonna get to play golf again?
Oh.
And I was like, wow, like I gotta take a step back here. And so I think again, as parents, there's no rule book, there's no owner's manual, and you do the best you can. I know Michael and Kim did the very best they could. Ashley and I are doing the very best that we can, and it's hard, and you know, our four kids are now sharing their parents with three other kids. Seven's a lot. It's a lot to be able to have one-on-one we were big on, one story I'll tell you about when we got there is that there was a FedEx or a Amazon package on the front doorstep. And so I opened it. My brother and I were really similar, just in just mainly just like can-do attitude, and just we didn't really like to accept no for an answer. So we've been able to be pretty successful in what we've done. And so the book was called Grit that was in that package. And it was
something I was going to ask you about.
Yep. Yeah. So written by Angela Duckworth. And it's a book that he would have given me. It's a book that he would have read, and he would have called me and said, I'm ordering this for you. This is our story, right? Because, you know, not that we were like,
but you guys grew up in the Delta, right?
We grew up in Brandon, okay. Yeah, right outside of Jackson.
Okay.
So, and my mom was a school teacher, had high expectations of us, and we were both very close to our mom. And my dad left our family when I was in 10th grade. So my brother was a freshman in college. And so, that made Michael and me even closer, because he was my guy. He was like my, you know, my mentor and, sure. my big brother. And so we were both pretty scrappy when it just came to just working hard, outworking everybody. And, so I think that, you know, that in itself just made us want to just prove everybody wrong and do what we could do to be as successful as possible and take really good care of our families, because we just didn't have that example in a dad. So
that book, when it showed up, did you almost view it as a, hey, this is something that maybe not that he saw something coming, but hey, I'm going to leave you with a guidebook here, 'cause you're going to have your hands full and I want to help. Was that crazy? Did you think along those lines? Or
I didn't think it at the time. I did take that book, and as the crowds kind of left the house, our family got together, and I told the story of just the fact that this book arrived today. We're a gritty family. Your parents were very gritty, and it's going to take a lot of grit to get through however long this is going to be, forever. And so I really think we should come up with a family motto, and I think it should be Perry Grit. And so we had that as a family motto, and we were very intentional about having a Sunday to sit down together, have dinner, talk about our week, and almost have like a family meeting. And then our text thread, even to this day, is Perry Grit. So that book stuck with us. My mom actually wrote the author a letter, and she sent us a note, and it was very nice. And if you haven't read the book Grit, it's an amazing book, and it's so true. And I feel like there's a lack of grit right now. And I think if anything else, what I tell people, that whether I'm talking to college students or people that are just joining the workforce, is that, you know, like, there's a lot of people that are pretty lazy out there. And if you do have some grit and outwork everybody, you'll win 99% of the time.
Yeah. Grit will make up for a lack of talent.
For sure.
It'll make up for a lack of intelligence or whatever. If you just bust it, you had to bust it. I mean, you guys had no choice. I mean, like you said, I mean, Ashley didn't sign up for that when you asked her to marry you and she said yes. She probably wasn't thinking, yeah, we're going to end up in Oxford raising 7 kids and 3 of them aren't going to be mine, and this isn't going to be easy, and we're going to be shuffling everywhere. And how did you mentioned your own kids. How did you kind of, you and Ashley, how did you guys kind of maintain those bonds that are critical in those years, right? I mean, like for me, you know, Carson and I would always go on trips to see the Cubs or to see, you know, whoever, and it was typically sports, but it wasn't always sports. But, you know, Laura would do stuff with the girls. Then I took the girls to D.C. And I have all these things that I remember, you know, me and my kids. How did you do stuff with your kids to keep those bonds going? You know, mom and father, daughter, father, son, mother, son, that kind of thing. And at the same time, not, you know, alienate the children that had lost their parents through no fault of their own. How did you balance that?
Yeah, really, that was really tricky. And again, I think kind of just going back to, like, we're pretty goal-oriented people. And if you have 7 kids and you don't have a calendar and you don't write things down, they're not going to happen. And so I think the just being very intentional about, like, I'm going to do I'm going to do something once a month with each kid one-on-one. I'm going to do something with Michael and Kim's kids all together, something with my kids all together. I mean, our love is the same, like across the board. So the love for these kids was always there. But I really think just, you know, kids need attention. They need attention from a mother or an aunt, and they need attention from a dad or an uncle. And so we really just try to focus on that and just make sure we're intentional about spending that time. And we didn't always do it right, and we didn't always do it perfect. And I think that I travel for work, and so a lot of times Ashley was left making sure she was keeping everybody where they needed to be. My sister-in-law's mom moved to Oxford. My mom moved to Oxford. Brad spent some time here because none of the kids could drive. So when we first got here, the oldest was 13. So it was three more years until Sarah drove. And we didn't want to be just passing them off to their friends' parents so that they could take them to all the practices. We were really intentional about making sure that we filled that role. And it was a lot. It was a Uber service, basically. I had a big Sprinter van that we drove around.
I remember that.
Harry Grid on the back. So the memories are fun to look back on. It's none of it was easy. It's still not easy, but really, you know, nothing worth having is easy.
Not all marriages get through something like that. Yours obviously did. I mean, you guys, I mean, I'm certainly not inside, but from the outside looking in, you guys look like a hell of a team. How did you find time to, you know, spend time with each other just to where you're not? Because I have to think that at the end of a lot of days, because we do it with three kids, right? When they were little, and at the end of a lot of days, you're just beat, man. I mean, you're just like, I'm going to pour something in a glass here for a minute. And then
right.
30 minutes from now, I'm going to sleep. How did y'all find some time just to build your relationship?
Yeah, I think, again, trying to separate ourselves was really hard because even if we would go to dinner on the square together as a date night, something was going on. And so we were like constantly being pinged about this came up, that came up. And to be able to really disconnect, Ashley and I are both music people. So that's kind of our default is that we'll go to a concert and that gets you away from your phone and to really enjoy that. So we would just plan trips like that. And they didn't happen at first. It was more of just the date nights that we would try to do, but we lean very heavily on our faith. And so that really, I think in the grand scheme of things, that's really what kept us grounded. She's an amazing woman, or she would have left a long time ago. So it's been tough. She lost her mother. She lost her dad and her brother. And so this is our family. And so again, I think that she's just leans very heavily on her faith. She has a really good crew of friends that she can bounce things off of. And we just locked arms and a lot of times just through that grit and just doing it. We're like, we would just look at each other and just say, we're doing it.
Was it more challenging with the older kids than it was the younger ones, or not necessarily?
Not necessarily. Just kind of depends on, you know, every child's different and everyone has different needs. Everyone, again, like going back to the grief, because we didn't want to just like overwhelm these kids by just being in their face at all times. Sometimes they just needed to go in their room and cry and us not go in there and say, what's wrong? We knew what was wrong. And so I think that's always delicate. And then the ones that act like everything's great, sometimes it's not either. So just really learning the personalities. We've done a lot of counseling. So I think that's been very beneficial with all the kids. And Ashley and I are like, she's way more emotional than I am, but I think we really try to be open with the kids and like make sure that there is that emotional connection there, because we care about them making good grades and being good at sports, but we also care about them being good people. We want them to be able to have an outlet. We want them to be able to have a connection to us, all seven, because life's hard, as you know. Middle school's hard, high school's hard, college is hard, getting a job. So we really want to be able to be a sounding board. I think we do an amazing job. I know Ashley, she's hard on herself sometimes, but she's done amazing. And, you know, when I people tell me that all the time. I'm like, please just tell her that so she hears it from you.
Yeah, I'm always amazed. I've seen you guys at different things, you know, soccer games or dance stuff or whatever. Yeah, there's one night that always kind of stuck out to me. I don't know why it did. It was last year. John West was playing soccer for OHS. He was a senior. My son Carson was a freshman at the time. Carson looked up to John West a lot, but Carson wasn't playing he played a little bit as a freshman, not much. John West was out there the whole time, probably the best player on the team. And they were playing in, I want to say it was Lewisburg. It was so cold. God, it was so cold. All I could remember was how cold it was. And I kept hearing this voice because I had found a spot where for whatever reason, I was as warm as I was going to get. And I was like, I'm not moving. I'm just going to stay right here. And I kept hearing this voice sitting in a chair going, let's go, JW. And I looked over and that was you. And I don't know why that struck me because it wasn't anything all that, but it was just like, they've been through so much. And here they are out at the soccer field. Oxford's playing this game against a team that's pretty chippy. And it was an emotional game. And you remember probably the game because I remember Oxford won and the kids for Lewisburg were like, y'all aren't even going to the playoffs. Y'all aren't even going to the playoffs. There was a lot of that. There's a lot of talking. Yeah. I was afraid there was going to be a fight, all that stuff. And I just kept seeing you over there. All you were was just encouraging. Let's go. Come on. You got, you know, stuff like that. And I just remember thinking, they do this every day. There's never a time to have a bad day. There's never a time to have an off day. You have to cheer. Because I don't know about you. I think the role of a parent, a lot of times, I have people ask me about parenting. And for me, the one thing I've learned about parenting is that you have to be a cheerleader at all times. I mean, sometimes you got to be a disciplinarian and sometimes you got to get real. Like we have some, you know, like get real moments. We're going to have a real conversation about what, but at the end of the day, they got to know that you're on their team, that you've got their back, that you're there, you're present. You want what's best for them. You're going to cheer for them, period.
Yeah.
And there was just something about that moment. I know it was just a soccer game, and it doesn't matter. It was an Oxford High School soccer game. But there was something about that moment that really struck me. It was kind of powerful a little bit, and it was nothing. It was just – there were lots of parents doing that.
Yeah.
But it just hit me that, no, they're there all the time. You guys were always there, and I thought – I don't know. It was powerful to me, and I can't be the only person that would see you or Ashley or both of you at an event like that and think, that's the one thing that they're showing their kids at all times is that we're here.
Yeah. And look, it's hard to be at seven places at once. So if anybody can figure out how to do that, let me know. But we do try to do as much as we can. We do have to split up a lot just to make sure that there is coverage. Now we have three in college, so we're doing the parents' weekends and that kind of thing. But I will say this, and what I tell people when they're like, wow, I don't know what I would do if that happened to me and I have a brother or a sister. And what I'll say is that, like, Michael would be doing this exact same thing. I have zero doubt. And so that made it easy. I also tell people that I love and that I care about that, like, none of us are getting out of here alive. If you don't have it written out, it doesn't matter what you've said to anybody. It's the state will go by the legal documents. If there's no legal documents in place, they'll make their mind up as to what they do. So especially for young parents, I tell my friends all the time, like, if you don't have a will, it's not that expensive to go do it. If you want to go to estate planning, it's a little bit different. And I'm not an estate attorney, but if that's not written, then it's a guessing game. And if you have kids, you owe it to your kids to not have that be a factor when they lose their parents. So if Sarah and John West and Anna Reed had to figure out, well, now we all got to pick, we may have to split up. How are we going to do this? Where are we going to live? Where are we going to move? Then that's just that much more burden on them. And so I have a sales team. I talk about this with my co-workers and my competitors that are in the gaming space that I work in, that that's one thing you can do for your kids is make sure that there are things in place, because none of us are getting out of here alive. He was 43. I was 40 when they died. he was 43 and Kim was 42, and that's, they're just getting started.
I assume you've learned a lot about the legal world. You've probably learned a lot about, like you mentioned, estate planning and things of that nature. You've probably learned a hell of a lot more about money management and financial planning than you ever dreamed you would. And you were already pretty successful. Probably learned a lot more about aviation than you ever wanted to. I'm sure this has impacted every aspect of your life, but like what spaces have you become almost an expert in that before this you didn't know a whole hell of a lot about?
Yeah, I mean, I knew nothing about, both my parents were living and at the time my dad has since passed away, but I'd never had like a death in my family that was really close. All of Ashley's family was still living. She lost her mom in 2013. And so we dealt with a little bit of that, but we had a lot of help. Whereas this one, it was a lot on us. And so, yeah, I just think, again, just trying to juggle things around career, family, friends, and just thinking about like what's most important, what's also least important. And I think that like that will really makes you more organized for one, because you have to be in order to just get through the day to make sure that everything's taken care of. But yeah, I know more than I would like to about estate planning, about aviation. But again, all pointing back to the kids, making sure they're healthy. And they are, they're all seven kids, very healthy. Like we're very blessed in the fact that we don't have extra around just taking care of the kids. They're all pretty self-motivated. They all want the best out of life. And we talk about Michael and Kim all the time. It's not like some taboo thing. Like,
yeah,
we talk about them, we tell stories, we laugh about it. And Sarah and John West and Anna Reed, that's their legacy. When we talk about, when we have to have the hard conversations about, hey, like, let's do this, get back in line, this your parents' legacy. So like, what would they want you to do? And I think that's what the root of what we get back to.
That leads me to something. I was curious, like when you have to make big decisions, like where to go to college, right? I know Sarah's at Boise State.
Mm-hmm.
John West is at Georgia.
Right.
Just got back from the national championship game. I'm sure that was a pretty fun trip. Probably fun time to be a Georgia fan. How do you make those decisions?
Yeah.
Do you leave them up to them, or did you think about, hey, what would my brother and sister-in-law want? How did you kind of manage some of those things?
Combination, and really no differently. Just we are Knox, our oldest son is a sophomore at Arkansas, and then our daughter Ada Grace, who's a senior at Oxford High School, just chose Arkansas. And she had choices. She had Tennessee and LSU and Oklahoma and Arkansas. And really with all of them, like we took them all to different schools. We looked at everything, just as I feel like Michael and Kim would have done, because Michael went to Ole Miss and I went to Ole Miss because Michael went to Ole Miss.
Right.
And so I think, again, now everybody has so many more options, it seems like. And that's really what I want for all the kids. I want them to have options. I want to set them up. I do a lot of just family coaching, I feel like, about, like you were saying, being cheerleader. Ashley does the same thing. And we want our kids to have options, the best options that they can have. And then they don't really know because they're 18 years old. So we really try to lay out pros and cons and what are you going to do next? You know, what will this do for you if you get in here? Do you want to play sports in college? Sarah played college soccer at a junior college before she went to Boise State. John West thought about it. He kind of looked around a little bit, but was pretty set on going to Georgia in the end. And so again, I think it's a combination of a lot of things, but it all kind of boils down to, we want them to be surrounded by good people. We want them to have options in life, and we want them to thrive, just like every good parent wants for their kids.
What would Michael say if he could talk to you today about what you've done with his kids?
Yeah, I think I would like to think that he'd be very proud of me. I mean, I think that again, we were each other's biggest fans. I went the business route, he went the dental route, but we helped each other in a lot of big decisions. We're really close. And so we had this competition for a little while about who was going to have the most kids. And I won. I had four. He had three. Now I'm raising his. But yeah, I think that I would love to say that he would be very proud and also say sorry, even though, you know, he didn't know, but none of us know, right? None of us know what's going to happen. And we just have to live those days together. And we had some amazing memories, and I have some great pictures from them, and nobody can take that away.
Did it impact the way you travel, the way that you and your wife traveled together?
You know, I've had a lot of people ask me that, because people do travel separately. And I think my mom said this one time, but she's like, surely, like, well, we're not going to lose two boys on two plane crashes. And I fly a lot for work.
Yeah, I know
and
you
so
do.
So I don't fly private. I fly commercial. But yeah, I think no doubt the first couple of flights that I took were pretty nerve wracking. And I usually am asleep before it takes off and wake up when it lands. And I was not that. And then, you know, it's that conversation comes up a lot about when people talk about flying. And then, I don't want it to be awkward, but it is sometimes, because people, you know, even around here have private planes and that kind of thing. And I just, even with their kids, I'm like, I don't want y'all to, your dad would want you to go see the world. Your mom would want you to go see the world. Like, we don't want this to change your outlook on travel. And they have, they just got back in Thanksgiving. They went to see their Uncle Brad and, in London. And so I don't know what it's like in their head, but we've just encouraged it. You're not going to see me flying around on a small plane.
But. Yeah. They seem to be really close, the three of them. I know it wasn't initially, you know, because Sarah was older and, you know, she was a girl and things were different. But it seems like as the years have gone on, that, like, Caroline has told me that she thinks they're closer today than maybe they were back then. That probably has to be something that makes you feel good.
Absolutely. I mean, I think technology helps that, right? Because they are in different places now, but they're very close. Anna Reed obviously really looks up to Sarah and to John West. John West and Sarah always have each other's back. I feel like Sarah always kind of ran the ship for a while, but John West can hold his own. So it's funny seeing them together. And this past Christmas, we had all seven under one roof, and that only happens like once a year, twice a year maybe. And that's fun. Like, for me, there's nothing better like than having everybody there together. No real crazy dramas, and we're just having fun as a family.
You talked about how close you and Michael were. Did you ever get a chance to mourn yourself? You were so busy, and you talked about the initial reaction, but that shock.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've had some moments where you stood in a shower or something and it hit you, but.
Yeah, I definitely have those moments, whether it's seeing a picture or something somebody says, or listening to a song, or just the memories behind that. And so I do think probably my personality is to stay busier. And with that being said, we have done a lot of counseling too, that's helped. And again, I think that, you know, everybody handles it a little bit differently. And so for me, I think probably staying busy was my way of handling it, or exercising. I used to say that, like, these runs I'm going on are just my therapy sessions. And
I'd see you on Peloton sometime. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know there's something you live with every day. It's the journey's not over. Like you said, it won't be over till we all, you know, we're all leaving here, obviously. You talked about grit. We'll finish with grit. Mm-hmm. When you think about that word now, what does it mean to you?
Yeah, I think it means choice. I think that we wake up every day and you have a choice to lay there and not get up or get up. And then when you get up, you have a choice of how you're going to respond, how you're going to react, how hard you're going to work, what your attitude is going to be. And I think that, you know, grit is kind of all those things in like a bowl of soup. You just got to, and it takes all of them. You can't, can't let up. And when you do let up on one side or the other, it usually, it's usually pretty telling. Somebody closest to you can probably say, hey, like, you know, I hadn't seen you on the Peloton lately, or I haven't seen you running around the neighborhood. And all of those things together, I think, matter in your life. And, you know, we all have a choice every day. And I think that grit is something that Michael and I both have a lot of. And I think that what I've tried to do is just live in a way, not a perfect way, but in a way that these seven kids can say, you know what, like he had a gritty life and he did this for us and he sacrificed a lot. And same with Ashley. I mean, she has sacrificed a ton as well. So she deserves the crown, no doubt.
I think both of you are really inspirational people. I've always wanted to do this. I've always wanted to have the conversation. There were some questions that I had that you answered that I've never kind of had the courage to ask. I know a lot of people appreciate you being open also about it, because a lot of people wouldn't be, and the counseling and the importance of mental health and something we talk about a lot on our podcast, Chase and I do. So again, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil. Yeah, I've enjoyed it.
We'll be back next week with another guest. Don't know who that'll be. I wanted to start with Robert, and I think you guys see why, and we'll figure it out from there. But that's this edition of the Beer Garden. Thanks for being with us. Talk to you again next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.